There we go. And running live on Rumble and all of the other affiliate stations. Welcome to the program, Charles Moskowitz. Dovid is my guest, partners in Torah. Dovid and I tend to discuss issues of religion and their intersection with politics, Judaism, and Israel. Let me just see here. Let me make sure that. I'm having a couple of minor issues. Well, I don't know if it's so minor, but I'm having issues with YouTube. And I should just mention that the program's flagship station is and remains Rumble, since YouTube began to essentially rummage through my past archives going back years ago, and they found that I had discussed. Hold on.
Rumble since.
They found that I had discussed the verboten topic of the election of 2020 and whether or not it was stolen and whatnot. And so they started to remove videos and send me strikes. And I had five stations on YouTube. The main station, they basically took it down and it's gone. The other stations are still up, but they are frozen. I can't post anything there now. So I'm revising my website and I'm focusing on Rumble. And I'm actually wondering, I mean, this is something that's way out in left field, and I'm not saying I'm going to go forward with this. And I probably shouldn't have spent so much time investing in YouTube because it's inevitable that they would censor me. And in a way, I feel liberated that I don't have to worry about it anymore since Rumble has reassured me that they won't do this. But I kind of think that I might get involved with suing YouTube. And I'm looking into it. I'm actually going to be talking on Monday with someone who actually brought a lawsuit that made its way to the Supreme Court and that they won recently. And I'm going to ask them to consider it. And it's based on the premise that YouTube has said that I engaged in, quote, misinformation by questioning the election of 2020. And so I guess that the lawsuit will be three-pronged. First of all, how do they define misinformation? Exactly what is it that I said that was not informed? Because all of my sources are mainstream media that's been vetted in each case that they took down. The second issue is that if they say that the questioning of the 2020 election is misinformation, then why is it that they have hundreds of videos up about what actually now we know is in misinformation about the 2016 election where Donald Trump was elected? They were totally in all the way on the crackpot conspiracy theory that Russia and Putin collaborated with Trump, or as they like to say, colluded, in order to steal the 2016 election, and that Trump was basically a puppet of Russia. They have thousands of videos on that, and that has been proven to be real misinformation. And they revived that after the Mueller and his brown shirts finally admitted that that was false in the election of 2020, when they said that Russia colluded with Trump to create the Hunter Biden laptop. We now know that that was false. The New York Times admits that, and that the FBI had verified that laptop as having been Hunter Biden's. And the reason they did it was because they were protecting Biden. So, what I would say is that they're discriminating against me if they say that I engaged in misinformation, when in fact they allowed misinformation all over the place on election integrity. And then the third point is that they have damaged my reputation because now if people go to YouTube and they look me up or they look up certain topics, they get a panel that says this station has been removed because that I engaged in misinformation, and that's damaging to me. I don't want to be accused of doing that. And so thus that's something that gets into propriety, it gets into reputation, and reputation is something that's a valuable commodity. So anyway, David, that's what I'm up to. What are you up to?
Well,
Yeah, I'm feeling kind of pessimistic on the politics, just doing my studies. I streamed the engineering conference and almost hardly worth talking about politics. I mean, good luck with that. I mean, I hear your complaint. It's hard to imagine you having much success. I watched Susan Wojcicki was at the World Economic Forum. I watched her speech there.
And what'd she say?
Not much of substance. It was just like 30 minutes.
Isn't she married to one of the guys that owns Google? I believe she's married to Sergey Brin or his brother, I think.
Yeah, some connection. I mean, she was definitely Google started in her garage, that she was the one who rented out the garage when it first started out. And yeah, I'd have to say your chances are pretty small.
Oh no, I don't expect to win it, David. I just expect to make a point, and I think that it gets into some fundamental issues of free speech. And I
And people have
understand
been
that
suing
Google.
Twitter, and I mean, I guess if the reason that if they, they're defaming you, so they axed you, and they're publicly saying it's your fault because you're in non-polite words, they're basically calling you a liar.
That's right. Yeah. And I can back up, what I said with stuff that's been published and vetted in mainstream newspapers. I mean, that's all we have to go on. I mean, I'm not, I have no idea other than what I can gather. And, it's to kind of come out flat out and say that I engaged in misinformation. That's an opinion. And the fact that they would do that publicly is one that is damaging to me, and I think that there needs to be some accountability. At the same time, look, I mean, I am doing quite well on Rumble, and I probably, in retrospect, shouldn't have wasted my time all these past 2 years with YouTube. I should have focused on Rumble because a lot of people, Charlie Kirk, for example, is doing really well on Rumble, as are a lot of other people that I respect. So, that's where I am going forward. The program must go on and will go on. I'm making some revisions to my website, charlesmoskowitz.com, that, is going to bring in some more live streams and some other podcast venues and some, a lot of other things. And I'm going to start to promote that. So, it's all fine. I mean, in a way, it's liberating, as I said, because I don't have to now be, every worrying every second that I might say something, and then the next day turning on my YouTube station and wondering if I'm going to be there or not. I'm not there, so fine, it's over. Let's talk a little bit about obviously the big topic that's going on in this country, these mass murders by murderers going in and murdering people. I know I didn't put that very articulately. But since David, you and I discuss issues of Israel, and I think that I'd like to look at how Israel handles situations like this. And I'm particularly talking about the shooting at the school in Uvalde, Texas, which was particularly ugly and brutal, obviously, and an atrocity. And I think that I recall that in 1975, Israel had what's now known as the Ma'alot massacre. Ma'alot was a small community on the border of Lebanon, and a couple of people crossed over from Lebanon, and they seized a nursery school and were holding it hostage. The Israeli authorities got wind of it. They sent in the military. It was not good. The whole thing went out of control, and 50 children were murdered as a result, mostly at the hands of the terrorists, but also through the shoot, the crossfire through the shootout with the terrorists and the Israeli commandos who came in. And at that time, Israel was, for whatever reason, experimenting with gun control. They were doing some disarming of people. That ended. And what happened since then is that every school in Israel and every other institution where children gather you have people standing guards. Most of them are retired military people, boobies and zadies, in other words, older people who have retired, but who are trained with weapons and who know how to use them, and who are there to protect the schools. They basically strengthened the schools. They made it so there's only one door in and out. The other doors only go out, not in. And they put up some electronic things to monitor the premises. And since then, there hasn't been another shooting or another capture at a school in Israel, because anybody who shows up knows they're going to be met with full force. And it seems to me that that is the best way to go in the present crisis in this country. Now, I mean, I know of it's a Jewish school in my neighborhood here in Boston that does this. There's one door that goes out in and out. They have a man who was a former military officer sitting in a booth at the door with his arms. He has a gun that everyone sees. He's got television screens monitoring the premises, and it's very secure. And I think that that's the conversation that should be had. President Donald Trump spoke to the NRA and actually laid out this very scenario as a logical solution. At the same time, and I know this might annoy some people who are very pro-gun, as am I honestly don't understand why people need AR-15s, especially younger people. I have no problem with raising the age, and I have no problem with licensing them so that people have to undergo at least some training and some psychological testing before they can just buy them. What do you think of it?
Yeah, I mean, generally, I take the strong libertarian view on guns and, you know, God forbid, that's just the price of freedom. And even, you know, how sad it is that a mentally ill person, God forbid, like Nicholas Cruz's stepfather, I believe, said like that was his right, you know, when he said that he had the gun. And to some extent, that's a person's right to have a gun and to use it, even though, you know, they will be caught, they might cost them their life. But that's somewhat the price of freedom in America. That's generally my view. And there's nothing we could do about it or should do about it. You know, maybe try to become better people. Israel's a different situation completely. I mean, one thing, almost all of the violence in Israel comes from, you know, the war. And Israel is segregated. There's almost no integration. There's no... your Palestinians always live in different areas. There's no like integrated Palestinian Israeli areas, even in places like Haifa, Jerusalem, that have large Palestinian and Jewish populations. They're separate. They're clear division lines. Right. You know, it's not like America where we live amongst each other. And most of these school shootings are done by people who went to the school. So it's no comparison at all to Israel.
I understand. You're right. Because Israelis are coming usually in from the outside as terrorists.
And you're talking this guy who did, like, actually went to that school. That's his school that he shot up. And you know, most of these, that it's a direct connection. It's the school that they went to. It's their own peers that they're murdering. God forbid, like this guy who killed his doctor. And so Israel has, God forbid, murder and crime. You know, like Jews killing Jews happens, frequently, but I mean, it happens.
It's very rare.
It's not rare. I'm saying Israel's a country. There's millions of
people. Right. I mean, it's not. I don't think it's.
There's a few. I don't know. Like
there's some mobsters and things like that. But
I mean, there's a few murders a week. You read Israeli papers. A few people killed every week. You know, sometimes they're, you know, marital. Some, you know, God forbid, like. There's some crazy story, like parents kill, you know, people caring, killing their parents, mafia violence, Russians. But the main violence in Israel is related to the war, and it's terrorism related. And so it's a different manner of stopping terrorism than stopping some guy that used to get picked on, some guy who has a grievance against his peers and decides to resort to gun violence or the general, besides for these mass shooting of escalation where conflict just leads people to killing each other with guns. And the majority, like African-American, the vast majority of gun deaths are black on black crimes. And like in Detroit, there is some random violence and unsafety, but the vast majority, like 90% of gun deaths in Detroit and probably, Baltimore and Washington, D.C. is conflict of people who knew each other that got escalated into guns and people killing each other. And it's not terrorism at all related. It's people who knew each other, people from the same community, even people that went to the same schools together. So I put it's a breakdown in society, and you got.
But we're talking here about a very specific type of crime. I mean, of course, you have people shooting each other for a lot of reasons.
The Buffalo was different. That was a racially motivated.
It was, but the like, but the
thing like is Israel, that, Palestine. But that's a rarity.
But even that
90% of murders are people who know each other.
Yeah, but that's right. But we're talking here about a very specific phenomena, and that is people showing up and mass murdering people for no reason. I mean, they're like, this is something that people is relatively
reason, kind of like anti-Semitism. They're like, there's a reason. They had a grievance, and they decide to resolve their grievance through the most heinous act of murder. They were
even that's new. I mean, you say that
they for no reason is
well,
they always have reasons.
Yeah, but you say like you point out, for example, that the Buffalo situation was racially motivated, and it was.
That's a rarity. That represents like
yeah. But the point is that one and the one in South Carolina also, where this guy showed up at a church and he's murdered elderly black women worshiping. There's always been racism in this country. There's always been the Ku Klux Klan, but they don't do this. I mean, they're not showing up and mass murdering black people, looking for black people and killing them. There's something that's happened here, and it's the same thing. I put it in the same category as the guy who did the shooting in Uvalde. There have always been kids who are picked on who might go up and attack somebody who did this. But this kind of mass murder, I mean, it goes really back to Columbine. There is something going on here that's different and that's modern, and it's not the same. This isn't just, it's beyond a simple crime of passion or a directed murder. This is something else.
Conflict to gun murder. I mean, so I don't know what's so abnormal about it. People have conflict and they escalate.
Yeah, but why did this happen?
And we accused each other of anti-Semitism.
Yeah, but why did this happen
at this
level now?
But it gets escalated and people start killing.
I understand that. But why the mass murder now? Did this happen in the 1950s and 60s? Where you have people showing up at a school and mass murdering people or shooting black people en masse? This is something unusual about this. I get that there's arguments and that it could result in murder. That is a dark side of human nature. But there is something abnormal about the particular situation going on now. And it has nothing to do with guns either, because guns have always been around. If anything, they used to be more accessible. I'm old enough.
Crimes and deaths. I mean, statistically, even with the mass shooting, I mean, this year it's really risen, but I mean, the murders are still down compared to years ago. And it could be.
I'm not going woke, by the way.
Like Edward Dutton had mentioned copycat fame, that people seek some sort of fame in the internet age, in the media age, where that people
they want to be famous, so they go in and then shoot people, and it's a lot
there. We all know who those people are, like a relative nobody.
Well, it's like the guy that shot John Lennon, right? He wanted to be John Lennon. He had a girlfriend that looked like Yoko Ono. I mean, he was obsessed with him, and he thought that by going and killing him, he could actually have what he imagined Lennon had with that kind of fame, because he was like worshiping him as a rock star. So, yeah, I mean, there is that. And that's a mental illness.
The most famous person in the country,
right,
at least for a few weeks. This guy Ramos, he's a poor guy from a poor town. And God forbid he does this most horrific thing. But he's the most talked about person in the nation for a week.
Well, that's right. And that's part of it. The other thing that I think is going on here, David, well, there's two other things I think that are going on. The first one is the use of psychotropic drugs if you look at, I think most, if not every one of these cases, all the way from Columbine right up to Uvalde, these guys are on psych drugs. Now, I'm not saying that psych drugs don't have a role, but you look at the fine print of these drugs and you'll see homicide, suicide, extreme mood shifts. And, you know, people are not, these are younger people. They're not physically, mentally, emotionally well-developed enough to handle some of these drugs, and they're put on them. And I think that it can't be dismissed that that's part of the motivation. The other thing that occurs to me, and this is getting, I'm going to put on the tin hat here for a second. I can do that because we're not on YouTube, okay? After World War II, the art and science of mind control that emanated out of Nazi Germany with scientists who were involved in this, a lot of them came to this country through the CIA, and they also went to Russia through their secret service.
Operation Paperclip.
This is Operation MK Ultra. And it was conducted by Richard Helms, who was a major CIA guy. And it actually specifically did experiments on mind control, creating a mind-controlled robot. They literally were conditioning people. In Canada, it was done by the psychiatrist Dr. Ewan Cameron at McGill University. The big one here was Louis Jolion West at UCLA. And there were others who were doing these experiments with, in that case, they worked with LSD. They were doing some other things. I mean, Timothy Leary had a connection to it. And they were conditioning people to become assassins. Now, this is something that I'm not totally, you know, doing a tin hat here, because a lot of this did come out during the Church Committee hearings in the late 70s when they investigated the CIA. And at that time, we were told that MKUltra was ended and a lot of the information was destroyed. But did it really ever end? And the reason I mention this is because these guys who did these murders seem to fit a profile of someone who might have been tampered with. Now, why would they be tampered with by the CIA then sent out to kill people? I have no idea. And I'm not saying it's true, but it's not something that can be dismissed out of hand. There is something abnormal here. People might have been picked on in school. I know people who were picked on in school. I was picked on in school. I know what that's like. But you don't go out and start, and you feel like you'd like to kill somebody. I get that. But people actually going out and doing this, there's something wrong going on here. It's not normal. It makes me think there might have been some psychological management. What do you think?
Yeah, unfortunately, I think it's normal. I mentioned in terms of like the chat that, I mean, you used like CIA, but it could have been anybody. It could have been international, especially now with the internet, like, you know, God forbid this Ramos person like had a German girlfriend on the internet, or that he told that he was going to do this shooting. There's still like 6 unidentified people in the Discord server who are familiar with the TOPS shooting that you even egged the guy on.
Are you talking about in Uvalde?
Yeah, Uvalde, he messaged like some German.
Yeah, not to mention he had almost $10,000 worth of military hardware. I mean, where did he get the money?
This is the CIA. There's a lot of possibilities.
Yeah, and this was unemployed dropout, you know, high school dropout. How did he get his hands on almost $10,000 worth of weaponry? I mean, these are questions that aren't being brought up.
Yeah, but I don't think it's abnormal, and. I took this great course recently on serial killers, and it was a profile, and you know, like God forbid in Germany before World War I, there was like a whole string of like horrible serial killers, some that killed like possibly over 100 people, and there's a period that it's not necessarily a new phenomenon, and I think it's related to the decline of America and the lack of hope that people have, that the American dream, the whole litany of problems facing the country, but just saying people don't feel that they have much to look forward to. And then it's just a common emotion to want to cause pain on other people, say there's an enlightenment.
Well, David, that could have
Jesus principle that say, I don't want other people to suffer. I'm suffering, but it's not going to bring me any benefit to cause other people to suffer. But the concept that I'm suffering and it's going to bring some relief to my suffering by causing other people to suffer is a known aspect of human behavior. And you have these people that have nothing to look forward to in life, and they want to spread the suffering. And so America's declining, and God forbid, that's like people, we're scared of anti-Semitism and say that we're going to be the prime targets. If America declines and society breaks down and they turn against people, like, we know we're the most likely to turn out to be the prime targets. And that's why I mentioned, you know, these most horrific serial killers that exist, I think, in Germany between World War I and World War II. And it's probably related to, or even in Eastern Europe, that was just related to economic destitute and someone who you just decide that they're going to go crazy and start killing people because they don't have anything to look forward to. And you think that's abnormal, or you know, God forbid, I'm saying, unfortunately, Charles, that's normal. And if America keeps on declining, people have less to look forward to. People are going to spread their misery.
David, we've had periods in history where there was a lot more economic problems. And you know, look at the Great Depression of the 1930s. There were depressions in the 19th century as well. 1873, there was a major depression which sent thousands of people homeless. And that's when you started the hobo movement, you know, the bum movement. You know, this is not new. I mean, that's not new. There was less to look forward to. I mean, there have been people who have dealt with more crisis at different periods in history than this. And the people that are involved in this,
the murder rate wasn't just as higher than.
No, I don't think it was. And the people weren't doing mass murders. No, I don't. And also the people that are involved in these murders are not poor people. They're not, you know, they're not oppressed. In fact, some of them are fairly well to do. The guy in Buffalo looks like he came from a nice, you know, suburb with a nice home. Same thing. I don't know about Uvalde, but the point is that, you know, there's, you know, I get the fact that there's suffering and that people are dislocated and poor, but, you know, that doesn't, I don't think that really explains it.
Forward to in life.
Yeah. Well, the people didn't have much to look forward to in life in the 1930s. That depression went on for almost 10 years, and there were soup lines, and there was, this is before welfare, by the way. I mean, I don't know if that really necessarily correlates, because there weren't mass murders then. Now, you say that in Germany between the wars there were mass murders. Yeah, there were terrorist
killers. I don't know.
Yeah, but
some of the most horrific serial killers.
But they were connected to these terrorist groups, both on the radical left and on the radical right. In fact, the Antifa actually has its roots in Germany, pre World War II Germany. You know, they were against the Nazis, and the communists were doing the same thing in pre-World War II Germany. There were street gangs. There was a lot of violence. It was very political. It wasn't just random. It wasn't just people going out and deciding they're going to kill everybody. It had
psychopaths that usually did it over a period of years. They weren't mass.
I mean, you have like Jack the Ripper
that killed regularly for periods of years before they were caught.
Oh yeah, like Jack the Ripper, right? I mean, in London, sure. I mean, there were people like that, but it was not. This is what we're having now is an epidemic, and we have to look at it like that. We should look at, you know, this is like,
can you check your statistics? I mean, the murder rate is still lower than it was in the 80s.
Yeah, but the mass murder rate. I'm talking about these kind of mass killings. We're not talking about regular murder. That's something that's always around, and that's a law enforcement issue. I'm talking about these mass killings of people by young people, usually men, who are going out and just mass murdering. That is a new phenomena, and it needs to be looked at as such. And that's what I'm trying to do now. We're taking a look at the profile of these people. And I brought up two things that I see as similar. And by the way, none of them are poor. None of these people are, you know, they're all like fine. One of them is psych drugs, and the other is possible conditioning, you know, that they were triggered to assassinate by manipulating their brains. Anyways, what a subject this is, really.
I mean, say if it's Dutton said the study, I mean, it's most likely it could be a form of schizophrenia, and if it is manipulation, like I said, like psychopathy, that 1 out of 50 people basically have no conscience, and so if it be a manipulation factor, that it's you're finding these people, the psychopaths, and then enticing them to do these horrendous things, like suicide bombing, and the various things that historically, like you mentioned, the assassins, 2 weeks ago when we were speaking about it, saying if it's just statistically 1 out of 50 people is going to be a psychopath, meaning that they would have basically no remorse over killing somebody. And obviously not most psychopaths don't end up killers, but just say psychologically that they wouldn't have any remorse if they did it. And then to find these people and trigger them in whatever way. And they're, you've mentioned things like pornography. And it could also be the trend that it just, people hadn't thought about it, didn't become a thing till Columbine. And it's kind of like a record setting thing where it's like video game also, where there's practice. In the olden day, you know, like hunting, but now people play video games and practice at it, and videos that kind of like the alt-right or radicalization, anti-Semitism. You had to join some club, some secret mailing, most of the time to find these things. Now you can just click on the internet and you could be trained. You could see videos of previous people doing it. God forbid, some of the most popular things on the web is real violence. And so that level where a young kid could self-train themselves purely on the internet, how to do this, and then they could find some sort of social support network where God forbid there's people encouraging them to do it, like an incel or
Right. Why isn't the internet, they're busy censoring me for discussing a national election, but yet they allow this kind of crap to go on. I mean, not, and when I say that, not Rumble, I'm talking YouTube and Twitter and Facebook. They don't care. You know, this
God forbid, I looked at God forbid, psychological problems to see the video of the Buffalo shooting, and there's sites that
he was streaming it on Twitch.
But I was saying it was taken down. It's very hard to see. You have to go to international sites, like most American sites. You can't.
But they were seeing he was there for a long time, and he was assessing other things. And you have these guys that sitting in the basement looking at not just porn, but they're looking at this other crap.
I mean, you could see him, like he live streamed his murders, and the video exists. But that you have to go to the darker corners, like the 4chans or 8chans or international servers. So at the same time, God forbid, when the Christchurch shooting came out, God forbid, I ended up watching it when it came out, and it was on a web page, I think in Serbia or Ukraine, that you can't, like an American server, if they post that video, they're gonna get taken down. So I mean, you're talking like your politics, you're talking like you were talking like child pornography. So you're talking about videos glorifying murder, but they're hosted, and they're hosted internationally, and anybody could see it. And you could find the dark resources like child pornography where the videos exist. You risk prison time if you download that to your computer.
Right.
But they exist, and there's always servers. And
I have somebody on TikTok asking me, because I'm live streaming on TikTok. They're asking me if I support assault weapons bans because of, I think I implied that I do. And I guess that what I'd say about that is that I think that assault weapons should be seriously regulated. I don't know if they should be outright banned, but I would think that if someone is to get an assault weapon, they ought to have a pretty damn good reason for wanting one, and they should be trained, and there should be maybe some psychological testing. I think there already are laws about that that are not observed, which is the problem. I don't think we need new laws.
I think that to a straight recourse, that the person has a right to violent recourse against a society that they think that wronged them. It might cost them their life. They might spend the rest of their life.
No, they don't have a right to that, David.
Well, I mean, that's my.
We have a system of law and order. You don't have a right. There's no right to vigilantism. You don't have a right to go out and take recourse.
There's a right to attempt to.
I don't think you have a right to do anything of the kind. You don't have a right to violate someone else's life. You know, no, there's no such right. That's I don't believe you're right. You're not right about that.
Misinterpretation of it. I'm saying that.
I've never heard that. It's just saying that vigilantism is lawful. It's not.
No, it's not lawful. But saying the attempt to that a person saying, okay, that the person has in theory an enemy and that it's a crime.
You go after them in the legal system. You don't go after them by going out and killing them or breaking into their. Those things are not lawful.
We don't have a preventative justice system. We have a punishment after the fact.
We have a system that bans murder and breaking and entering and assault and battering.
People have the right to attempt a crime. People have the right
to
take their grievance out on society.
You don't have a right to attempt murder. There's a crime. It's called attempted murder. No, you don't have a right to do to violence. You don't have a right to go in and assault another person. Or even attempt to assault another person. That's
You're saying it's punishable, it's a crime, but you have the right, so to say, to attempt it, that the system isn't designed to stop people before they commit the crime.
No, but you don't have a right to do it. You're right. We don't police every single person before they do something. We have a police system and a system of justice that responds after the fact, but that doesn't mean you have a right to go out and do it. You can't regulate something before it happens.
Well,
but you can regulate something
that you do.
You can regulate something when it's happening and after it's happened.
Nicholas Cruz and Ramos had the right to take their revenge on society in the most horrible way.
No, they didn't.
It cost them their life. It was a crime.
They had no right to commit murder.
They should
be put to death.
But that's my extreme libertarian.
Is it? Well, yeah, but yeah, you, I don't know what kind of extremism you're into, but the fact of the matter is that the American system of jurisprudence, you don't have the right to do any of those things.
Those guys did have a right to purchase the gun and take their grievance.
Well, did they purchase their guns legally? If they did, then that's a question of gun control. Why weren't you? Maybe they did do that legally. Yeah. That doesn't, but even if they did, and I think that they probably did,
the shooting
they didn't have a right to then take that gun onto a school and shoot people. No, they don't.
His own doctor just.
Yeah, he didn't have a right to do that.
In Tulsa, literally purchased the gun 3 hours.
Fine, but he did not have the right to go into that hospital and shoot someone, David. No, he doesn't have that right. I'm sorry. That is not a right. You don't have the very basis of an organized society is to outlaw that kind of behavior. Only the state has a right to execute someone, and that's called the death penalty.
You don't have the right to execute somebody. That's not what I'm
saying.
Or
attempt to execute them. You don't have a right to go, you could shoot someone and miss. You don't have a right to do that. No.
If you're using the word right, in a preventative way, you do have the right to attempt to commit a crime.
Now I'm getting pilloried here by someone on TikTok. They think that I've gone woke, that I'm saying you can take guns. No, I'm not.
You are.
I'm saying regulate, not take.
Mainstream Republican opinion. Like, no, I mean, God forbid Ramos had a right to buy that AR-15.
And maybe he did, but I would suggest that there ought to be some regulation so that when Ramos went to buy the AR-15, there was a little background check. Maybe there was some process, just like when you go and get a driver's license. You don't just go and get your license. You have to pass a driver's test and show that you're competent in terms of driving a vehicle and you know the rules of the road. That way you protect people. Then you get your license. I don't see why guns shouldn't have the same thing.
Our freedom is dependent upon there not being any hindrance to people from purchasing guns. That's the price of freedom. God forbid.
Well, I don't think that you can rightfully sell a gun to somebody.
Unfortunately,
I don't think you can rightfully sell a gun to someone who intends to do harm to other people. You have to have some standards. In that context, 99.9% of American gun owners are law-abiding citizens, and they should not in any way be inhibited. And the liberals want to go after them. I mean, Biden, as usual, really stepped in it, and he ruined a good opportunity to maybe have some reasonable reform when he said that he wanted to confiscate people's handguns. That's wrong.
He wants to buy guns. Unfortunately, I got a lot of enemies. You know, you go into the gun store and say, ask them why you want to buy the guns. I got a lot of enemies. I'm sorry.
You know, you go to the store because you want to defend yourself.
Why isn't that a good enough reason? You're saying,
it's a good enough reason to say, I'm going to buy a gun because I want to defend my life and that of my family and my property, because I believe there are threats to the same. And that's a reasonable thing. I also think it's reasonable for society to be well armed, because it's a natural check and balance to state power. You know, we don't want to have a disarmed society. You end up with Nazi Germany or communist China, where no one has arms and the government can just show up anytime they want and seize you. You know, there's a reason why it's important to preserve the Second Amendment and the right to keep and bear arms. I get that, and I support that. However, if you have someone who is not properly trained, as in well-regulated militia, which is part of the Second Amendment, and they don't really qualify for having a gun because they're mentally ill and they don't pass some basic tests to prove their ability to function with a gun, then there are questions about that. I don't think these guys should have been sold guns. They had already been well known. This is another issue that I want to bring up. In every one of these cases,
Republican, I'm giving the mainstream and say, like, no, man, that's the people have a right to a weapon, and to say that that's a price, that if I harm a person in a way that they decide that they want to kill me, they have the right to purchase a gun and attempt to kill me with the gun. And
if
they're stopped,
call me a liberal if you want.
Myself, but just because, but that's their right, and that's what people.
All right, you can call me woke if you want. Fine, I reject that. I also think, David, that it's interesting.
That's the American culture, I mean, certainly the Western culture.
I think that this it's very complicated. Look, it's also interesting to me that I think in every
myself, he's saying people have the right to attempt to
kill David, in every one of these cases
of their choice.
In every one of these cases recently,
I could defend myself if they get caught, if the police stop them, or they might get, that might cost them their life to try to do it, or they might spend life in prison or get sentenced to death. But a person has a right to, God forbid, sacrifice their life, attempt to kill me with a weapon of their choosing. That's the price of freedom.
In every one of these cases, correct me if I'm wrong, and I think this goes back to Columbine, these people were already well known to local authorities. They already had, in the case of the guy in Buffalo, he had already threatened to blow up his high school. In fact, his nickname was High School Shooter. The case of Cruz, the FBI knew all about him. They had several cases. They had a file on him. The FBI knew, I think, about the Uvalde guy. Now, they can't know about every one of these shooters, but it does seem to be a pattern where people knew that these people were trouble. They knew that they were threatening people, and that's not legal. And they also then, into my way of thinking, because they were known as dangerous people, they don't have they should not be able to get a gun, actually. They probably should be put in a nut house. No, I don't think if you have someone who is engaging in threats, they should not be able to get a gun. Now, call me woke if you want, fine. Call me liberal, okay. I'm being called all kinds of names on TikTok. I'm looking at this.
Yeah, in general, I take the you know, I mean, mainline libertarian view and saying that's just the price of freedom.
No,
people do have the right.
You know, I accept the fact that we're going to have more gun violence in a free society. I get that because people are going to act out with guns. And I'm willing to accept that also, Dubit. You know, I'd rather have that than a society that has very little of gun violence, but you're in communist China, you know, where they can take a woman and drag her on the street and give her forced abortion. That wouldn't happen in America because we have guns. You know, I understand that you need to have weapons.
We don't have a preventative
system. But that doesn't mean that it can't be regulated.
After the fact system, not a preventative system. And once we have a preventative system, our freedom's gone.
No, I mean, I think they're taking a very hard level.
You know, I'm going to take the mainline, I'd say not even libertarian, Republican view, and we're not moving to a preventative system.
I think
no matter what happens, no matter how many people die, we're not moving to a preventative system. Our freedom is more important.
It's an interesting question. I don't think that it's
too many people have died. We have to move to a preventative system.
No, I don't know if it's quite that stark that you're moving to a preventative system. You know, you can have, you know, you have to preserve freedom of action and whatnot. I think, however, that there are exceptions. You know, I think Oliver Wendell Holmes, Chief Justice, expressed it well when he said that freedom of speech does not mean that you can yell fire in a crowded theater. You know, there are, you know, we live in a real world. You know, in a way, maybe I'm looking at this almost Talmudically. You have to look at principles and then work with those principles in the context of what is happening on the ground. And, you know, do we have a right to shoot somebody if they break into our house? Yes, you do, if it's to stop them because they're threatening you and your family. But that doesn't mean that you have a right to go out and break into a house and shoot someone.
We put it from the Israeli perspective because it wouldn't be enough. But if there's somebody that wants me dead so badly that they're willing to sacrifice their own life to do it, the law will not prevent them from doing it.
Prevent them from doing it. You're right. If somebody wants to kill you,
that's not enough because there's so many people that are willing to sacrifice their life in order to commit acts of terrorism that they have a preventative system. But it's saying here unfortunately.
David, look, you're right. If somebody wants to shoot you,
if somebody wants to kill me and they're willing to sacrifice their own life to do it, the government, the police will not do anything to stop them.
They can't stop them. I mean, look, you're right. Ultimately, if somebody wants to shoot you,
it's okay, here's a guy making threats against me, and just say, well, you say if something happens to me, it was probably him. And,
David, look, you're right.
It's not going to prevent them, and it's not even going to prevent them from having a gun. Here's this person who's threatening to kill me, and he just bought a gun, God forbid. And I say, well, that's his right. And just because he's
David, you're correct to note
he doesn't have the right to buy a gun.
You're correct to note that someone doesn't have the right. You know, if somebody wants to shoot you, they will ultimately, no matter what you do. You could have a whole live in a compound and have
that sacrifice their own life.
That's right. And that can't be stopped if somebody is that focused. But that doesn't mean that if they don't show signs in advance of intent in that way. Look at, what about restraining orders in a marriage? People can get a restraining order against a spouse who is threatening them. And if you go, no, it's before the fact. Excuse me. No, it's not after the fact. Someone goes to a court, they present evidence to a judge that my spouse is threatening my life. They get people to testify and they get a restraining order. That is not after the fact. That's before the fact. Now, there's a lot of other things they could do. I would frankly suggest that they learn how to handle a gun and they take a course called model mugging, which I'm a big fan of, especially for women, that they learn how to fight. But if you are threatened by someone, yeah, you can get a restraining order. That's in the law. I don't know how far back that goes, but I don't think that violates the Constitution.
I mentioned because, like, you know, the ADL, the FBI, a lot of people make threats. A lot of people make threats to Jewish institutes, and the FBI in this area is tapped out. You're like saying they don't have enough staff.
Fine. But the Jewish institutions are handling it themselves. My synagogue handles it by having an armed person.
I'm saying they have security, but it's saying that if a person is making threats, they could get a visit from the police or FBI saying that
they should.
Freedom of speech, or there could be a small penalty for making a threat or maybe a restraining order.
You know what, Dovid? If someone is,
they're not going to prevent the person from owning a gun. They're just going to visit the person. They're not. They're going to visit the person and they're going to say, we have our eye on you. Should you take this into action, you'll be caught and prosecuted. Even if a person's making threats of violence, they could still buy a gun. That's still their right. You could call the police. You could get a restraining order. And there could be a note that is saying, well, if something happens to me, it was probably this guy who keeps on making threats against me, and there'd be an investigation. But they still have the right to some extent to make the threats. And even if they're making the threats, they still have the right to arm themselves and buy guns.
David, we have, for example, and I don't know the exact constitutionality of this, but there is a sexual register, you know, like sexual abuse people who are out in prison, and you can look at a map and see if any of them live in your neighborhood. I don't think that that's unconstitutional. If someone is making violent threats against you or against your organization, now you say you can't therefore stop them from buying a gun. Let's say that theoretically that's true. And if you say it's true, I'll accept that.
This is what the FBI told the Jewish community, how they handle it.
Well, the best way to handle that then.
And they'll inform them that they're being watched.
And that that person should.
If they commit a crime, that they'll be caught. But they're not.
You've already said this.
Preventative.
You've already said this, David. Let's get off the merry-go-round here. If someone is doing that and they're threatening you and they're getting a gun, I would think that the best approach to that would be to not only know who this person is, but get a big poster and put up their face all over town and run it and make sure everybody knows who they are, what they look like, what their name is, what their address is, and that everybody get ready to fight. And, you know, if that be the case, and if that person steps foot on the premise, they should have their head blown off.
Well, it's kind of like the SPLC, but they have a lot more people.
What do you mean the SPLC?
And just do that.
Southern Poverty Law Center?
The SPLC has probably the single best database of that.
The SPLC, they have a database of people who are threatening to kill people in this country?
Well, probably the single best database in the country.
No, but that's an example of where that can be abused, because they, for example, they listed the Heritage Foundation as a terrorist group and somebody went into the lobby and started shooting. All right. That's list is very, very questionable because it's tainted by their leftist ideology. They put anybody that doesn't goose step to the left on that list.
Well, you could put it, that's where you could make a list of whatever it's America.
You have to have
a list of enemies for whatever reason.
Legitimacy, there has to be a process by which someone can be clearly and definitively identified.
It's like Canary Mission. You can make a list of people because they support BDS.
Yeah, you can.
A list of people because they're making violent threats. You could just make a list, God forbid, of Jews in general. People could make a list.
No, of course you can. I remember my grandmother.
Didn't do anything wrong, just because
they used to
warn people.
I remember my grandmother used to say there was this book that came out, the list of all the prominent Jews of Boston. She's like, this makes me nervous because if the Nazis come, this is the first book they're going to get. And they'll go down the list and take each one of them out. So yeah, you can make lists. Look, I mean, we're talking about people who are making definitive threats against the life of individuals and groups. I don't think that that's legal. I don't think that, and if it is legal, then there can be ways to make that person known to the community.
You can legally make indirect, if you're not directly threatening a crime, the level of making threats is actually relatively liberal. So even, you know, God forbid a person said that they want to kill people in this group, that's not necessarily an illegal crime. And then even
no, it's not. Look, if there's a major
the prosecution of the case of what would happen, and then, you know, it's like Israel, where if you're looking of people that are on list of willing to commit violence, there's hundreds of thousands of people on social media.
All right. I have a TikTok person. He says to me, Charles is against threats unless they're calling to hang Mike Pence. I never called to hang Mike Pence. What the hell he's talking about?
What is it, the January 6th?
Yeah, there's some alleged incident on January 6th where someone allegedly made that threat, which I don't even believe anyways.
Well, I'm pretty sure you could legally say that you want to hang treasonous politicians, but if you...
I'm not saying to call to hang anybody. If someone commits treason, we have a system of justice where someone can be tried, evidence can be brought, there can be charges made, there can be a lawyer present. It's called due process. I don't call for anybody to be hanged.
I mean, the protocol even is, if the FBI catches somebody and you're targeted, that they just inform you, like, oh, you know, this.
So look, in a local college here, where I happen to know somebody,
wants to kill
this
you.
Young woman said on the social media, she said she called for the death of all Zionists. All right, this is at a college in Boston. I'm not going to mention which. And this young woman did this she happened to be Palestinian. Okay, fine. She put this up on the social media page of the college, and the college did nothing about it. You know, is that free speech? I mean, I suppose it is, unless she said, call for the death of a particular Zionist, right? I mean, she wanted, the college was going to hire this company that apparently did business with an Israeli company, and she wanted to boycott them because they were Israeli. Now, that's obviously discrimination. I mean, would you boycott someone if they were black? You know, this is like, you know, it's wrong. But, you know, I suppose in that you have to have a very broad definition of free speech, and they have a right. Now, if she had said specifically that this person is targeted, I don't know if that's legal. If she said Shlomo so-and-so calling for his death in a public venue, I'm not sure that's legal. Anyway, David, we're reaching toward the end of the program. What do you have coming up on your show?
Well, Shavuos, given the Torah, that's Saturday night, you know, the holiday. Yeah. So I'm not going to do a week in review. I don't have any direct streaming plans. They have the automation. So I streamed this week the injection molding conference, or maybe that was already the week before. This next week is the automation conference. So I'll probably go down to the convention. I'll do a live stream from the floor. Mm-hmm. I think 2 weeks after is the International Silicon Conference. So, you know, try to focus on your manufacturing, avoid the politics, because it's tough. I don't know who my audience are speaking to, or it's...
Right, I understand.
And even, you know, that you're likely to create enemies just being involved in politics. And you say, if you know just informing how the current U.S. legal system works. And I was making the point that really the FBI, all they'll do is inform you, even if there's somebody who's trying to kill you. And they said that if there's a case where there's not a strong enough case or whatever case, that it was actually, I heard from Richard Spencer, who was informed by the FBI. He said, like, this person, we have reason to believe is trying to kill you. But that's all you get. So, like, if you're, you know, you're...
Right, no, I understand.
And Rashida Tlaib, in her, you know, like, I'm friends with her, you know, former Jewish assistant who used to open the mail and take the phone calls and get the death threats. And most of the people who made death threats against Rashida Tlaib didn't get caught. And I don't think maybe one of them got arrested. And even if...
if you're making a threat to it.
But I said, okay, Rashida Tlaib, she's getting death threats. And they come, okay, it's this person. And we have reasonable belief that they might be trying to kill you, but not enough to preventively, okay, you know, arrest them or you know, they're not, or spend the government.
Although I would think that if a sitting congressperson is threatened, that's what we call an insurrection in the real sense. Anyways, I have my program, the flagship station is Rumble. And I would ask my TikTok followers to please subscribe to my Rumble station. It's free. It doesn't cost you anything. You can go there by just going to Moskowitz Rumble, and subscribe in case I'm taken off somewhere else. And my book is still available at Amazon Books, The Biden Coup, The Sociopolitical Effects of an Illegitimate Regime. It was nice. Alex Newman interviewed me. He's interviewing me again, which is a big deal. So the book is doing okay. So check it out. And David, are you going to an all-night talk on Shavuos? You're going to be taking in some of these lectures at the synagogue?
Well, the only thing near my house is Young Israel. I might go. I saw COVID numbers are actually on the way down. Like, I've been kind of scared.
Right.
I'm not scared, but I feel okay. Like, I don't really need to gather, so I won't. But now I see COVID numbers. The deaths have started picking down. Like, there was high cases in Michigan. It got up to 4,000. Now it's back down to 2,000, even when the numbers of the hospitalization and deaths didn't seem to rise. So I might end up going to synagogue. Well, I probably won't go to the all-night learning, but hopefully maybe I'll try to catch Minyan and, the Torah.
I always like to go. I mean, my synagogue has some really wacky left-wing talks, and it's always fun to.
They're usually pretty.
Yeah.
To go and take some notes. So liberal, but they're usually more kind of just generic Torah topics.
Oh, my people get into, it gives me a chance to do a little field trip and find out what the left is thinking these days. Anyway, David, so I want to thank you as always.
Great. Have a happy Shavuos, a good Shabbos, and blessings, and see you next week.
Same to you. Okay. Bye-bye.